welcome back to The Glider Show, the audio podcast about learning to fly gliders. I'm your host, Sam, and I'm learning to glide at Dartmoor Gliding Society, a small, friendly club located on the western edge of Dartmoor in the southwest of the UK. We fly from a 1,000-metre-long grass airfield on a hill a couple of miles out of the market town of Tavistock in West Devon. Our club aircraft include two Schleicher K-13s, a K-8, a Polish twin-seater called a Boschen, a single-seat Flugvogel, I think it is, and a couple more K-13s undergoing restoration at the moment. On top of that, there's a whole host of member gliders parked up on site. Most of them I haven't actually seen out of their containers. Not surprising given the weather we've had over this autumn and this winter. Now, launches at Dartmoor Gliding Society are provided by Winch, and we get about 1,000 feet being the average launch height here. And the airfield runs east-west, or west-east, depending on your point of view, and the wind is normally from the west, and that's the warm Gulf Stream. Now, sometimes in the winter, that changes direction and it swings around to come from the east, and when that happens it brings wave lift, and club members have got up to 12,000 feet and more using that stairway to heaven. In the summer there's good thermal lift available, along with some ridge lift in places along the sides of the hill that the airfield is based on. Well, I've been learning now for nearly 5 months, and I'm averaging about 2 Sundays a month at the club. Now, if you listen to The Glider Show number 8, you'll understand why being told last weekend that I'm two-thirds of the way to solo came as quite a bit of a shock. You're invited to follow my progress week by week as I make the transition from thoroughly demoralised glider one day to tenacious winner the very next. It's amazing the ups and downs on this journey, and I'm not sure, actually, that I've ever experienced anything quite like it. Well, this week's show is about how quickly the needle can swing from demotivation and despair to confident and engaged again. I'll take you up with me on the flight that made all the difference. And I take a look at the Sky Race World Cup concept and ask, do we really want gliding to be a sexy TV sport? Now, first of all, in the news this week, I didn't quit. Well, no matter how demoralised I got, I'm still learning and the podcast is still going. Also in the news, I missed the wave again this weekend. But it was all right because, thanks to Steve Lewis's advice on Twitter, I realised that I needed calm, confidence-building circuits more than I needed the frisky conditions that seemed to come with wave. Conditions that actually stopped flying down at DGS last week. And finally in the news, I've repositioned the audio recorder in the cockpit. I know the news is a bit limp this week, but I've been looking for a solution to my how to handle the audio recorder while in the cockpit dilemma. And if you've ever taken a video camera or any handheld cameras into the glider cockpit with you, you may have experienced that the instructor can get very edgy and nervous about it. Quite rightly so. The last thing they want is a bulky piece of technology wedged underneath the critical controls when they most need them to operate. So up till now, I've managed to solve the problem with a variety of idiosyncratic fixing solutions. None of them really work very well. Backed up by a lanyard around my neck with one of those carabiner things, a miniature carabiner thing, to make sure that whatever else happened, the audio recorder couldn't fall on the floor. Varied results. One of the problems, of course, with that is that it gets in the way of the instruments and sometimes just records more of me than it does of the instructor. So I did a bit of work and borrowed a couple of attachments from the Drift HD camera that we bought for work and fixed the self-adhesive mounts to both the Boschen and the K-13 in the last couple of weeks. And on the K13, what it means is that the audio recorder is now positioned behind me. It clicks and locks into place, so there's no danger of it falling off. And on top of that, the added bonus is that it captures the instructor's wisdom and sage advice very clearly. And occasionally you hear a little grunt of me saying something in return. And at the gliding club. Now, if you listened to the last show, you would have heard me talking like I was ready to quit trying to learn how to glide. And I really was. I just couldn't seem to get to the point where I felt good or confident about anything I was doing in the air. The launch scared me, stick and rudder coordination escaped me, spoken orders confused me, and landings seemed to happen despite me. So when I found myself sitting in the front seat of the K13 on Sunday morning, waiting for the winch to take up the slack, I really wasn't enjoying myself at all. But luckily it was too late, and all I could do now was to register how tense and nervous I was feeling and resign myself to getting the aircraft off the ground safely. I felt the glider lurching forward and banging on its wheel over the rough ground, and then we were airborne and I was letting it rotate into the climb. On this first flight, my instructor Don guided me through the circuit. We went upwind of the airfield a little bit. He took control only in order to play with a bit of lift that we found on the way back along the airfield. And then he guided me through the rest of the circuit to landing, but left me to handle the controls myself. Now, as soon as we were down, I felt a whole lot better, I can tell you. Amazing how good that was for my flagging confidence. Well, no sooner had we touched down than we got retrieved back to the launch point. And this time, Don said that he was going to do an unprompted circuit with me. Now, that meant he was going to let me do everything and wasn't going to say a word. It was going to be a silent flight. The result is one of those milestones in my journey to becoming a solo pilot. And this is how it went. So the right wing dipped a little bit there, but I caught it to my amazement. That was the first of many odd sounds on that particular day's gliding. Now we're up into 45 degrees in the climb, and I'm starting to feel almost elated, I think, at this point, that we're off the ground safely. And there's that sense of relief, lowering the nose, everything goes a little bit quieter. And it went quiet because I ran out of speed and was just at the sort of edge of the stall there. And so I flew out in a straight line heading towards the little village of Mary Tavy, and for the first time I looked down and noticed the school bus company. And I could see all the little buses lined up. From 1,000 feet, they looked tiny. And I was really pleased, unusually, strangely pleased. Now, I'd made a beginning of a right-hand turn here. I was picking up speed, and you can hear it getting a little bit louder. And I carried that turn on into a 180 degrees practically. And it was great because all I was really thinking about is safely getting it back to the other end and setting myself up in the circuit to make a safe landing. Beginning to be conscious I'm in control. I think just about this point I'm really starting to get a moment's thrill. And I turn in to the diagonal leg, and I'm choosing the point at which I do it. And I kind of knew instinctively what my height was and when was right to turn in. Basically melded the diagonal leg and the base leg into one movement, because I just knew that's what I needed to do with the amount of height I had left, and lined up. And I chose to open the air brakes about now. Unbeknownst to me, I was coming in a bit close to the hedge, but I was concentrating on getting down safely.
Steer right. I've got the right foot on. That hedge is ever so close. It's one of those occasions where the crosswind really could take you into an obstacle, you know, if it's close.
I wasn't watching that distance, so thank you for that.
Right. Well, but it was good. It was good. Okay, so how much did I say in that flight?
Sweet
yes. Excellent.
Thank you for that experience.
Okay,
it wasn't great at the end, but...
It was okay, exactly. It wasn't perfect. I doubt whether anyone can fly perfect anyway, but it was pretty good. And a building block for you, because now you know that you can do the takeoff, you can do the whole thing, and you can put it back on the ground again, and we're not actually going to die, at least I hope not, right? So now what I'd like to do on this next one is get you to do a circuit on the right-hand side. What I want to show you on the first flight is that you can judge the whether you're on the ideal approach path. Your approach path, if you're looking from the side, could be zero break.
Yeah.
No, negative, I can't see them at all.
Half brake.
Full brake.
Do you have a vehicle there?
So there's a couple of flights before I was coming in half.
Yeah, it should be about right.
Which is what you said ages ago, I remember. It's good.
But now, we need it so that we've intercepted a two-third air brake approach.
Thank
goodness. No good just opening the brakes for halfway and then wondering where we're going to arrive. Do we want to arrive where we want to arrive? And we want half to two-third air braking while we're doing it. So.
Well, on the last... I mean, I wasn't doing this thing, but on the last one, I did feel that I was coming down too steep, so I closed the air brakes a little bit.
How did you know?
How did I know? I didn't do it by a reference point, I don't think, but I just knew I was landing too short for my liking, so I needed some more.
Well, what we're going to do is we're going to choose and select a reference area here. It will be some, you're just going to have to use a bit of imagination, but some patch of ground to beam the launch up. We're going to call that our reference point. That's where we aim to round out. Right? So it's not where we're going to land or not where we're going to stop. And we're not going to get any prizes. If we stop there, we've probably done it wrong.
Yeah.
But we're going to call that our reference
point.
Flight 13, please.
Launch to winch, take up slack, K13, south cable.
Taking up slack, K13, south cable.
And now we're getting on, boy.
All out, all out, all out. So all in all, in the space of a week, a complete turnaround for me, and six flights last Sunday really did wonders for restoring my confidence. And I can't underestimate the sense of surprise and achievement to realise at some point, I think about my second or third flight, I remember a particular moment on the downwind side of the airfield, flying back towards the launch point. And there was just a moment, this precious moment, where I was really just suddenly conscious that I was enjoying this. So there was just this great feeling of enjoying it. And I guess it was so unusual that it was at that moment I realized that actually I hadn't enjoyed a single minute of it before that. And I think that was just the most amazing feeling. Now, on this show, I want to make sense of gliding's image. Now, it's fair to say that to an outsider, and dare I say it, to many a newcomer, that the first impression of gliding is one of grunge, inconvenience, silly hats, bitter cold, grumpy old codgers, far-off, unattainable competitions, impenetrable jargon, completely unsexy hierarchies of organization and control bodies, glimpses of exotic plastic over mountains or endless Namibian deserts, small club politics, confidence troughs, moments of personal achievement. And of course, it's all there in the focus on the word solo. Solo, folks, it means people who like being on their own in the sky. So it doesn't take long to discover that for most people, at least here in the UK, learning to glide is probably anything but sexy. It's hard, it's challenging, it's exhilarating, it's exhausting and hugely rewarding, yes, but sexy, no. It's also not hard to see why the age profile is going up and why there are so few people coming into the sport. It's definitely not a sport for instant gratification. You've got to put in hard work. If you're going to do it at an affordable level, you're going to do it with a club, and it means you're going to have to take part and you're going to have to give equally as much as you get. And for a lot of people in a consumer age, that's not really a great deal. They want to pay the money and come and do it and go home and forget the grungy muckiness. So all of that is why a link on a gliding Facebook page this week caught my eye, and the link was titled, Can Gliding Become a TV Sport? Now, I clicked on that link and found myself viewing a presentation in YouTube, and this presentation was by someone called Mario Hutton, or Hitton, a Scandinavian chap. I've nicknamed him Mario, I am not a glider pilot, Hitton. And that's his own words from another website, by the way. He's apparently not a glider pilot. But he's the man behind the concept of the Sky Race World Cup. And this is an idea to make gliding as engaging and high profile as Formula One. Now, in his presentation, Mario makes a lot of really good points about gliding's PR problem. Particularly in his use of one slide full of bucket-hatted middle-aged men in beards. But he also talks a lot about its massive TV potential. Now, his idea is, amongst other things, to mix remote-controlled camera technology, think of GoPro Plus, if you like, breathtaking scenery from around the world, beautiful gliders, and an elite group of dashing young aviators flying environmentally impeccable machines. That's the sort of idea for his future of the sport of gliding on TV. Now, this idea becomes even more appealing when you think about how hard Formula One had to work to re-engineer human decision-making back into the sport to make it even vaguely interesting. Now, for years, of course, it stagnated in a situation where everybody had exactly the same car, everybody was on exactly the same circuit, and basically nothing happened. Once you got off the start line and the first few people had crashed out on the first corner, that was it. There was almost no chance of anyone passing anyone, and no strategy involved, no excitement, no intrigue, nothing to talk about. Just became quite boring. And by comparison, of course, gliding has this kind of strategic decision-making intrigue in abundance. So it's almost inevitable that someone like Mario will engineer sexiness into gliding and create a sport that generates huge amounts of money for sponsors, media companies, and a few elite flyers. But when they've done that, the question for me is, will we still be able to fly all day for £50 sterling the way we currently can? Will it still be possible to own a flying machine that we can freely take to the skies in for less than £2,500? And if gliding becomes a big money TV sport, and if it attracts young people to it, what will they be attracted by? The chance to stand outside in the bitter cold all day and scrape frozen mud from the underside of a wooden canvas K-13? And finally, what about those people, people like me, who aren't interested in the sport of gliding? Because as a newcomer, you'd be forgiven for thinking that there's nothing else to do once you've gone solo, but compete. Well, what if you don't want to compete? Maybe if gliding was less like an old boys club and more like Formula One, maybe the age profile would come down. I don't doubt it. I'm just not sure what the cost would be. Well, one thing's for certain, it's a discussion that will run and run. I'd really welcome your view on it. What's the future of gliding going to hold? Now, in comms this week, I'd like to say, first of all, a big thank you to DJR1989, whoever you are. Thank you very much for your 5-star review on iTunes. Having set the podcast up, having listed it in iTunes and done all of that sort of stuff, I'd forgotten to check and see if anyone had ever left a review. I was mildly surprised to find I have one review in there, and it's a 5-star one. So, DJR1989, thank you very much. More of those, please. And I also got an email just now from Son of Flubber, who's talked to us before on the Glider Show. And he says, "Hi, Sam, I just listened to your latest podcast about your bad day of sled rides. That's what we call short flights on this side of the pond. You made a lot of mistakes that day and you are discouraged." Well, you're damn right there. "This happens to every gliding student eventually. It certainly happened to me. Here's the thing. You haven't flown enough flights to have developed good habits and motor skills." And you're absolutely right there. "Everything you do at the stage of flying is done with a conscious effort." And he's right, because that explains why there wasn't any space left in my brain for processing instructions to go left or right. "For this reason," Son of Flubber says, "your performance goes down the crapper when anything is the least bit off." He says, "In your case, you had not flown in 6 weeks. That in itself is enough to explain your poor performance." And he recommends that I look at Wikipedia link, and I'll put that on the show notes, a useful little resource. But he says, "Check this link to find other clues on why you flew poorly. Because you are a novice, your performance is 10 times more fragile than a practiced pilot. You have no deeply rooted habits to fall back on when your conscious mind is malfunctioning." This guy knows me. "I hope that you've now learned that you might fly badly if something is not 100% right. That is an important lesson. Now you need to learn to properly evaluate your readiness before you get in the glider." Now, Son of Flubber has mentioned this to me before and raised that issue. And I think I've said at the time that I think it's a subject for a future podcast. It's a very valid subject. He says, "You need to learn how to prepare yourself days ahead of time so that you are 100% right when you get into the airfield. You need to learn to be smart and cancel your flight when you're not 100% right, even if you are already at the airfield." You raise a really good point there, because although I was nervous last Sunday when I sat out on the runway after my really crappy week the week before, I had switched a switch over in my mind. And I had decided, and I didn't quite know what this meant, but I decided that I was going to do this differently. And I didn't know how exactly, but I just made a decision to do it differently. I'd made a decision not to quit, and I had also made a decision not to think so much. What I recognized is that my self-criticism is the worst part about my learning to fly. Son of Flubber goes on to say, "You need to learn to be smart and cancel your flight when you are not 100% right, even if you are already at the airfield. You might even pull the release and get out of the glider right before it launches if you feel that you are not 100%. One day you will go to the airfield and find a reason to cancel. Maybe the crosswind is too strong for your taste. Maybe you're feeling a little bit off. Cancel your flight at the very, very last minute. It's a skill to learn. You will irritate your instructor, but he will respect your maturity and tell you that you did the right thing. You will be embarrassed. Go through the motions just so you know how to cancel and so you don't hesitate when the next time to cancel comes along." I think that is a brilliant piece of advice. I think we're going to return to this subject in more depth in a future podcast. I'm sure of it, because I think you've raised probably quite an unspoken principle. And I think there's some real truth in there. So thank you very much for your email. Much appreciated. Also got an email today from Mark Maiden from Maiden Flight Podcast, and that's at maidenflightpodcast.com. I'll put the link in the show notes. And Mark says, "Hi, Sam. Just wanted to say thanks for all the hard work you're putting into producing the podcast. I'm really enjoying hearing about your journey. In your latest episode, you were very honest in how you were feeling about your training and how discouraged you were after those flights. I just wanted to encourage you to hang in there and keep going. I've had a few plateau moments in my training and a few am I ever going to get this thoughts, which tend to get you down a bit, particularly if flying has been a dream of yours for so long. You can start thinking, is it even right for you? One thing that really helped me was to every now and then take a purely pleasure flight with no particular object to the lesson than to just enjoy getting up in the air. It can help you just remember why you're doing it. It certainly helped me. Anyway, says Mark, I certainly hope you don't give it up and manage to make some progress soon. All the best and thanks again for the podcasts. Thank you for that encouragement, Mark. Interestingly, I listened to an episode of your podcast a couple of months ago. I really enjoyed it. It was the one where you went solo, and I think it was an inspiration for me actually to post the audio of my first silent flight that you heard in this podcast. So if you recognize anything familiar about the sound of the flight with me talking over the top of it, then I think you can take some credit for that. So folks, if you get a chance, go across to maidenflightpodcast.com and follow Mark. I think he's about 9 or so episodes into his flying training as well, and that's powered aircraft. Well, that's it for show number 9 of The Glider Show. I hope you enjoyed listening. More importantly, I hope that if you ever reach that point where you feel like giving up because it's like you're just not getting it, you'll remember that it can change overnight in the space of a few flights. If you are feeling that way, then don't keep it to yourself. Talk to fellow pilots at your club and your instructor. I was really surprised at how many people at our club had read my blog and at how much encouragement they had for me when I showed up at the weekend. It really helped. You know who you guys are. Thank you very much for that. But I wouldn't have benefited from their support and advice if I hadn't written or spoken about it in the first place. The Glider Show is aimed at people learning to glide anywhere in the world, and I know that there are a lot of you out there. You may all be wearing bucket hats and growing beards, but I know there are plenty of you out there. There's also an open invitation to be part of the show at any time, and there are plenty of simple ways you can do this too. The best is to record and send me a short audio clip to ukglider@hotmail.com. It's not hard to do. If you've got a smartphone or a PC, then you're just a couple of clicks away from taking part. All you need on your iPhone is the Voice Memo app or any kind of recording software on your laptop or PC. Most of them have got built-in microphones. You could probably find a number of ways to record an audio file as an MP3 and send it. Don't forget, you can also tweet me at UK Glider. You can You can check the Take Part page on the website at ukglider.com. What's so hard about that? For some more information on how to take part in The Glider Show. The Glider Show music is Cloud 9, provided by Norwegian slide guitarist Finn, courtesy of Music Alley, a great website that helps to connect budding musicians with podcasters like me who can promote their music. It's a brilliant arrangement. I get free music and Finn gets a mention and the occasional plug. Like today, if you love the sound of slide guitar, then take a listen to Finn's stuff here, and I've put a link to that in the show notes. Don't forget that if you click the subscribe to The Glider Show in iTunes button over there on the right-hand side of the website, that little thin blue button, you'll get new episodes automatically delivered to your PC, Mac or smartphone, whatever you listen on. You've been listening to The Glider Show. I'm Sam Deeks, and I'm pleased to have found my gliding mojo again and looking forward to going solo in the spring or summer of this year. Until next time, fly safe.